stand up?
Yep. I think you're Ellis. So I think we're going to have you start. So, thank you. Yep.
Okay. I think you all have my plan in your packet. So let me just tell you, basically, our plan has been devised through our committees at our school. We voted, our staff voted to continue on with our responsive school teams, even though the funding would be there for them as it has been in the past. So each committee took a portion of our school improvement plan and designed the goals that they wanted to set and how they were going to measure the goal for the plan. And then that was all approved. It's been a little bit difficult and challenging having our community council election in the fall. So the community council in the spring kind of gave thought to where the trust fund money would go and how we put all that in. Then the fall community council, which all turned over but one, has just kind of approved the plan.
But what's done in the spring?
So our first goal is our overall arching goals is to keep our language arts and our math at 85% for students being proficient. We feel like for our population that's a good goal for our area. And then also with our ESL students, we're going to have them continue to work on passing off math vocabulary. We feel like if they can get a working knowledge of the math vocabulary, that will really help them in their future as they progress through the school years. So our goal is to do all of these. The first one from our staff development team, they have the first goal, and they're going to do all the training this year, and we've decided to focus on thinking maps as it relates to the Common Core. Our second goal is always to help our students at risk. And we really feel like as a teaching staff, we've got the academic side down. We're working really well with that, but we still need to get more student buy-in and more student behavior, caring about their academics and where they want to be. So they'd like to focus on behavior. We purchased a positive action program for them to work on, and they're assuring that the teachers are teaching that. And they're having great success. Our fifth grade team did one the other day with eggs. Now you can blow out the eggs and just leave the shell. And talked about self-esteem with the kids and how it is fragile. And when we hurt each other's feelings, we put cracks in those eggshells, and they actually got it. And we're making comments to each other. We're hurting. We're, you know, she's got a fragile eggshell. We need to be careful with that. And I thought, you know, if we can get us to buy into more of that caring, that'll be great. The third goal focuses on our ESL students and is run by the Transitions Committee. And they're designing smart board presentations and ways to assess vocabulary that's quickly done so teachers can get through that fast. Our fourth one is done by our data team, and they're the ones that measure everything that goes on in our school. So the chapter test, the math facts, the writing, comprehension, fluency, word work, all of those kind of things, they keep an eye on how we're doing and where our kids are. They'll also delve more into the CRT and our progress scores, so that we can start to look at where those kids are and who we need to move and who we need to hold on to. The last area is the logistics team, and they've added to involve parents and students because a lot of what they do is for the students of the school. They function to take care of all that. So that's kind of our plan. Do you have questions for me?
Any questions?
Good plan.
I love your 4 points, and frankly, this is to work on math and language arts, but and I wrote down that improved tier one instruction ensures success for students at risk. Maintain high accelerated pace and involve parents and students. Those could be your goals forever. Truly, because that's, you're always going to have a new set of kids to work that with that on.
Yep, and new families and that way.
And new teachers.
And new teachers.
So I was impressed with your plan.
I was too. Just a question. How's your AmeriCorps volunteers working? Do you?
Our AmeriCorps rocks.
Does it?
Lori Hale, and she has been responsible to tie in that new Read Today program with the volunteers that are coming through the LDS Church. And we have a team that comes in at 7:30 in the morning, works with a group of students Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then we have another team that comes in the afternoons from 1:30 to 2:30. So I think right now we're probably helping 20 kids in the morning and probably spent another 20 in the afternoon. With that individual one-on-one help, and she's in charge of doing all of the training for that and making sure we're fine with that.
Great.
It's been great for us.
Okay. Have they responded to the training pretty well?
The adults?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they've done really well. It'll be interesting to see how they go, and we'll know more at Christmas time when we're all like, ooh, do we want to stay or not stay?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes for our older citizens, it's hard to get out in the winter.
I know that.
Security group might be a little shaky. We'll see what happens there.
I'm having trouble getting out in the summer, too.
I have trouble getting up in the morning. Any other questions I can answer for you?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Sue.
You're welcome.
Well, Jed?
And since you say head, what's the difference, because we might really get off, tell me the difference between just AmeriCorps and AmeriCorps Vista. Some are labeled as AmeriCorps Vista, some are labeled as AmeriCorps.
We've given them...
You know, I've never used the Vista person, so I don't know
since
sure
you've sent the one
AmeriCorps
on email.
They can only work with, like, letters. They try to, like, work with that. So there's some, you know...
That's what I thought, because I noticed at Bridger it's AmeriCorps Vista, or somebody listed a Vista person, and then it was, oh, that's part of AmeriCorps. So I was just confused. And so what's the difference with Vista? You had both last year.
University and AmeriCorps through the state program.
But they're both AmeriCorps.
They're both under AmeriCorps' umbrella, but separate grants.
Okay.
They truly, they don't call themselves AmeriCorps. When they're Vista, they don't, because the grants and the expectations of the two programs are very, very different.
And what they can and can't do, right?
Correct.
Okay. That was one of my questions as I looked through, and different schools were saying different things, and
we actually get money for AmeriCorps to reimburse those people.
Mm-hmm.
With the Vista, they have to pay for that out of trust lines or something else.
Okay.
Okay.
Ready?
You bet, Jed. Thanks.
Let's find your school.
Find you.
And we have to remember which school he's actually at.
And that's, he's at Bridger. No, it's up there now.
Yeah, that's the one just before Ellis.
Okay, well, our process for developing our school improvement plan, which is still, I must say, it's still in draft form. I have a great school community council this year, and they are giving lots of feedback, and we've met three times, and we have our final meeting next week to finalize. But we felt like we didn't have enough time to really provide input from parents on our council. So it's still a draft form, and it's still changing. And I passed out a definition of terms, is something that they wanted to work on today. So that'll be on there from now on. But anyway, our process has been. I meet with every grade level, and every grade level comes up with a grade level goal for what they want their students to be able to do. And then I take that from each grade level and kind of make that into a school-wide goal that we can all work toward. And that guides our data discussions. It guides all of our conversations are based on that grade level goal. So are we making progress toward that? And if not, how do we change things so that we are? So we put that together, and then with the community council, we met once with just a blank document and got some suggestions there, and then put together just the basics of this plan, and then went back with them two more times to look at it. And I've emailed it out to staff to get their feedback on it as well. And so, like I said, we'll have it all finalized by next week. So we didn't really know what our measures are going to look like this year. And we, not knowing that, we went the route of, well, we're going to just put our emphasis on what we measure ourselves, on our own assessments, and say we want 80% of our students proficient on our assessments. And with the idea that whatever comes with the CRT, or however that works out, that instruction that gets them to that level in our building with our own rigorous assessments will translate into success on the end of level assessment. So we went with 80% proficiency in both language arts and math, 65% proficiency in ESL, and our goal number 4 is to achieve, we wanted a customer service goal.
It's 12.
And when you look at customer service, that's a difficult thing to measure. So the only measure we have, and it's a great measure, is the ISQ that goes out every year. So as we look at that, we have a typical score under parent support, which means it's yellow.
Yeah.
We don't like yellow. We want to be green or purple. So we're gonna try and increase that rating to superior, which would be green. over the next year. And as I look back, that's traditionally, you know, you look down, it tells you the parents, what parents score and what teachers score. We're yellow because parents score us for parent support as yellow and teachers score us as red. And so we've got some work to do. And I feel like that's something that the Bridger community needs to do. They need to know that Bridger is a great school. It is not a more challenging school than any of our other schools. And there's so much just a misconception that it's a challenging place to be. And it's not. We have great kids and great teachers. So we're hoping to change that and have that reflected in our ISQ.
So do you have specific strategies to do that?
Yeah, we do. We do. One thing the community council has recommended is increasing communication. And so we're working hard to build our Facebook page and get lots of people. The reason I like to use Facebook for that is because it's the information we send out goes to the parent. They don't have to come to our website to find it. Does that make sense? So if we type in there, if they like our page, and we say, you know, this such and such is going on, or support us in this way, that goes out to them, and they don't have to find it. We've had a lot of feedback about our webpage, and I spent a lot of time. We have a new webpage now. That's really great. It's updated, and we'll be putting positive messages out there. I think one of these is on here. I'm going to, between myself and the refocus teacher, we make 50 positive phone calls home a week. And so I look 5 a day, and she does 5 a day, and we tell them that it goes from our reward system. So we let them know they got a Best Bear ticket and that we are glad they're part of our school. We thank them for trusting us with their child's education and ask if there's anything we can do to improve your experience, let me know. And I've never had at Bridger, I've never had anybody say, you know, well, you can do this for this, but it's nice to put that out there. As I look through the ISQ survey results, bullying has been a problem. And we've addressed that. We have tons of supervision out on the playground, figured out some ways to get more people out there, and it's great. So fun to go outside. There's all these adults playing with kids have all these balls. It's just a lot of fun. So, and then the teachers, we read this book called Simple Truths of Service that I shared with you guys at Adams about Johnny the Bagger. Mm-hmm. And every teacher has postcards that they send home for thank you for volunteering and thank you for choosing Bridger, which there's lots of positive things out there. And our next professional development, our next faculty meeting will be the first Wednesday in November, and we're going to be talking about the importance of, okay, we need positive messages out there, and that needs to come from us. It needs to start with us and make sure we're being positive about not just our school, but education in general. Done with my tangent on that. So in order to accomplish our goals of 80% in those areas, we're going to continue with our thinking maps training. The response to literature is the writing component, well, part of the writing component for that, and that takes kids deeper. Our Singapore math strategies, reflex math, curriculum mapping, and then we have the part about increasing communication. To implement our professional development, we use our lesson study format. So we have a professional development, and then the teachers, the grade level, plan the lesson that implements the things that we learned. They all teach it, and one of the teachers is observed by the rest of the grade level, the lesson that they plan together. And then Carrie, the literacy coach, and I cover the other classrooms while they do that. And then during the next literacy team meeting, we meet and they debrief over how the lesson went. You know, what did you notice, what went well, what didn't go well, what would we change next time? It's a strategy to take a new thing that we're learning and start using it. It's difficult to change. It's difficult to make that shift, so it's an effective way of doing that. So our professional development is going to be focusing on those thinking maps and getting the writing, really focused on writing and critical thinking skills, and the lesson study format is the way to get that. Any questions?
Hmm.
I was really glad that you put in that a measurable way to see if you are reaching out to the community. and ISQ is one way. Where in the past we've always kind of said, well, we can have anecdotal stuff, but I like that measurement. That's a great measurement.
Good. Thanks. I think Bridger's a great school. And I tell people that I'm Bridger, and they're, how are you doing?
It's a great place.
We need to
agree. Need to work on that. Since I live in the Bridger neighborhood, I know how we need to do that.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jed. Daryl.
I thought maybe students still had to go
in. Oh, she really looked through hers. And just a second. Get these in order.
What page when you get there?
I'll tell you when I get there. It's on 55.
Starts 51.
How many pages do you have?
77.
Our biggest problem is finding stuff.
Just takes us a minute. Okay.
First of all, the things you're going to see at the top, we set four goals. I was actually going to take off the fourth one before I set it to you, but that's it. I'll tell you why just a moment. Goal number one is we're going to achieve the following percentage of students in proficiency or benchmark by May of 2013 on the following assessments. This is our goal that's focusing on language arts. We had a better, I don't want to call it success, or it was easier to celebrate, easier to look specifically where we had concerns when we had each grade level set their own specific data based upon the kids they were getting. So rather than set just a basic 75% or 80% school-wide, we chose to go a different percentage for each grade level based upon the data that they already had for those kids coming. So it was more realistic. Every one of the goals you see on there, for example, when you look across at Dibbles, and you look at even a second grade who had 68% and 75%, those are still well above where the kids they have coming. And so it's a challenging goal to them, but at the same time, it's a goal that's realistic so that we have an opportunity to be able to celebrate. So you see the same thing on SRI. We're going to be doing the same thing on that one. And then our CRT goals for language arts for third, fourth, and fifth grade were pretty consistent. That's 80, 85%, 80% range. Second one is a math goal. We're going to be looking at 80% of our class. In each class, we'll be at proficiency, which we established as 80%, on each chapter assessment in our new math curriculum goal map. And 80% of students were proficient on the math CRT administered in May 2013. Interesting, each grade level, third, fourth, and fifth, looked at the kids who were coming. Fourth and fifth were able to look at their previous math CRT data. And all of them ended up with the 80%, so that was easy to write up there, because that's what ended up being there. The third goal, dealing with our ELL population. Third grade set a goal of 70% of our ELL students at proficiency on the CRT at the end of this year. Fourth grade, 65%, and fifth grade, 70%. And again, it's not because any grade level fourth grade is trying to work less than another grade, it's because of the group of students they're getting. The fourth goal we had on there, actually, we leave it on just because we found in by setting a school-wide behavior goal over the years that it's gave us that challenge and it's gave us something that we can measure whether we're being successful or not at our school. So we're going to continue to focus on our goal we had last year, which is in our refocus room, 150 or less class 2 referrals and 80 or fewer aggressions on that part. Then down below, you'll see all the different areas we're going to be working on with the objectives and our actions. These, again, tie in really closely with what we're going to be doing from professional learning. The biggest chunk of our professional learning this year is that we'll be in all the other elementary schools will be our thinking maps writing, along with still getting thinking maps strong. So, first goal we have is trying to make sure that we've got thinking maps strengthened because we've only been using it for a year. Mm-hmm. And now we're adding the writing portion to it. And if you're not familiar with that, there's a whole bunch of little components to that. it's a pretty big chunk to bite off, and it's a multi-year plan that we're into. So those are our big ones.
When we were there last year, we saw some teachers using a lot of thinking maps.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There are other teachers that didn't seem to be quite doing that. Is that changing, or more of the teachers buying into it?
We're getting more and more. We have certain expectations that we'd expect out of each other.
Yeah.
And some are more comfortable just kind of meeting the expectation. There's others who just fly with it.
Right.
You know, for example, our teams all plan together. One of the things is they plan, they are expected to plan opportunities for thinking maps integration. But yet you'll have teachers who are becoming a lot more comfortable with it, that while you're up teaching, an opportunity will come that all of a sudden, bam, we'll do that. But the cool thing about thinking maps this year is, for example, I was in a first grade class the other day, and they were introducing this year thinking map. And as soon as they put it up on the board, every kid in that class who had been at the school before knew what it was.
Understood that format. And that's,
so that's what we hope to, that we're able to see, as we keep seeing the kids become more familiar and they understand the thinking process behind it. So that's going to take up a big part of our time with the writing. We want to continue some of the things we've been doing with math, with the concrete, pictorial, abstract, problem-solving kind of things. We're finding right now, so far, finding wood for no contact, we're finding so far that the Go Math curriculum is working very well.
So it's better than
compared
last
to where we were at last year,
okay.
Where your teacher
yeah.
was in the district last year.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is a good feeling to know that teachers are seeing that that's lining up with the core, that it's teacher-friendly. So far.
They're not jumping around like they had to.
You know, as a matter of fact, I work with the second grade team, and they're able to go right through the book. And unlike in the past, if you were to go right through the book, you'd have a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't in the core and a whole bunch of stuff you have to add. Right now, going through the book, we're teaching the core, and there's not any extra. There's nothing missing. So
that's great.
It's very nice so far. But anyway, that's where we're at right now. Any questions for me?
Good job.
Do you have all the AmeriCorps volunteers?
We do, and thank you very
much. They all showed.
We have training going on with your state.
Okay.
These last 2 days.
So did you get all 20 of them show up?
I know we had 7 come yesterday. I wasn't there this morning
for
the principal's meeting, and I don't know for sure how many came today.
Okay.
But all told, we're going to have about, what did we figure, 30? 30
good.
Of Green Today volunteers working
okay.
at 9 to 10 is also going to be incredible.
Good.
So okay. thank you. I never had a chance to
play. No, I just, sometimes you worry if they sign up, and then if it gets false,
well,
so
we'll see.
I'm great.
They did that in 3 days.
Yeah.
That's how much
notification.
No, I just glad we got.
Good. It's an interesting process. Those of us who see both sides of it, it's really interesting to have kind of both hats on it and trying to get that out and the word right. But when it does work, it's really neat.
It's a good thing they called when they did, because 2 days later I had Wilson call and want volunteers, so they missed by a few days. Good. Good.
Thanks for all your work, Darryl.
Thanks, Darryl.
Thank you.
Should we wait?
Well, Eric, do you want to
get you
go now?
Sure.
Okay.
We're kind of screaming ahead, so.
And you're here.
If you want.
He was going to give himself a breath.
Oh, we got to go back. Let's go, baby. Hillcrest. Where are you?
And sometimes knowing whether I'm going backwards or forwards is the trick, too. When it's
who's found it?
Yeah.
Hillcrest. There's one Hillcrest. Hillcrest. That's goal two, so.
Wow, this is kind of cool. I feel like I'm in a virtual world.
Isn't it neat? Yeah. Now we've got Dave's email list up. But
okay.
Or is that yours?
Do you want to go ahead and just get started?
We have it in front of us.
Yeah.
All
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah, we have it.
All right, well, I'm excited to be here. We have a great process for Hillcrest to be able to look at our school improvement plan. So
we keep going down to the Hillcrest SIP plan, single final, I believe.
Yeah, that one just had this one.
That, 691?
Yeah. That's probably the best one. Yeah. Good job, Stacy. All right, well, we were very excited as we evaluated our school improvement plan from last year. We had four goals last year: language arts goal, a math goal, a ESL goal, and then students with disabilities. And we were so excited. Now, you don't have last year's in front of you, but I just want to share with you, we accomplished all four of our goals. We were very excited. We celebrated as a staff in the spring because we had the preliminary data, and as it came in the finalized form in the fall, we not only met our goals, but we destroyed them. We were very excited. So as we looked at that, we thought, you know, we want to stretch ourselves a little bit for this year. And it was a very collaborative process between the school community council, our parents, and our staff. And so as you look, you'll see that our goals this year are very similar to last year. We want to continue to focus on reading comprehension and especially inference skills, because we feel like that's such a valuable skill as students are reading to learn. And last year we were at 70%. This year we took our baseline data, 49% of our students from second through fifth were 49% of our students were proficient. So we want to increase that from 49 to 72. So we stretched ourselves a little bit by 2 percentage points. But we're very confident that we'll be able to do that. In math, we were one of the few schools in the state of Utah that actually saw an increase in our math scores last year for proficiency. And that was amazing. I'm sure many principals have talked to you about it. That for the last couple of years, last year and this year, we are teaching the Common Core, but we are being assessed by the old Utah Core.
Being tested on the old.
Yes. And so we feel that as a real compliment to our teachers and our students, that our proficiency level actually went up from 81 to 84% last year. We were very excited. We don't know if we're going to match that. We're just not sure. So we kept that at 80% because we felt like that was a good goal to look for. And then finally, we looked at our ESL. And this is we know the state, and I'm really excited about it. So are teachers, that we're going more toward progress scores for our students. So we said, let's kind of, dip our toe into that a little bit for our last goal. And so we're going to use our UALPA levels of all of our students from grades K through 2. And as you know, there are 5 UALPA levels. They start with, entering, you go all the way up into fluent. We want to get our students, no matter where they come in, we want to at least get them to go up one level in grades K through 2. We feel if we can do that, then by the time they're in third grade, that they will not need ESL services anymore, and they'll be able to get that instruction inside of the classroom with an ESL certified teacher.
If they come to you before third grade.
Right, and I think really as we're finding a lot of these students that are coming into our school, no matter what level they come in, we just feel that we can help them make progress through that year and get there. And I think it's a realistic goal. As we looked at our ESL students from last year, we only have 5 students that actually went down in a UALPA level. Everybody else either stayed the same or progressed. So what we're trying to do is focus on our individual ESL students and make sure they get growth. Because as we look at our numbers, we're 460 students. 101 of our students are considered ESL students. And so, that's a demographic shift for Hillcrest, even since I've been a principal there. So you can see our objectives, our actions, our outcomes, our responsibility, timeline, professional development, and technology. In the interest of time, I just want to share with you what our vision is for this year. You'll see all of our teachers, hopefully, if we leave them at home, sometimes we do, but we all are wearing, all of the adults at the school are wearing these little puzzle pieces this year. Because we really feel like an essential piece of our success is for us to be together and to be as one. And so I'm just going to show you a visual. Oops. So Anita did this right before we came, so I hope this stays together. So looks like it's going to stay together. So this is a picture of last year, all of our students and all of our staff. obviously we haven't had time to do it here. I went ahead and made a puzzle out of it, and then on the back, let me do this carefully, we had every single one of our staff members, our adults in our school, sign this this puzzle piece of our school. We feel like it's really symbolic of the success at our school is really dependent upon the individuals that run our programs, the individuals that teach our students, and the individuals that help our students succeed every single day. As a follow-up to this, we now that we have class pictures, we're going to do a similar thing with every single class, and then we're just going to display that in the classroom or outside the classroom somewhere where they can see, and then have the students do a similar exercise while they put their name on the back of the piece of the puzzle as they put together their class, letting them know that they are part, even though they're just one little piece. As you put all those pieces together, they are a large piece of the puzzle of our success here at Hillcrest. So we're very excited. The excitement of the school year has kind of dwindled down a little bit. Now we're kind of getting down to business of learning. And so we feel like we're doing some great things at Hillcrest, but we always know that there's room for improvement. And so we're excited for the school year. So do you have any questions?
Questions, anyone? No.
Tell me about your True Leadership 7 Habits of Healthy Kids.
All right. Thank you for asking, Ann. I appreciate that. Have you ever had a book that you just started reading and you couldn't put it down? Well, I had that experience this summer. I was reading a book called The Leader in Me, and it's by Stephen R. Covey. And as I was reading this book, it talks about a school that, and I was reading this account of this school, it was like I was looking at our school in a mirror. The school was 50 years old, it's about half free and reduced lunch, but they were a good school, but they weren't great. And so I read about this principal and how she took this personal challenge that she wanted to make this school a great school and also start to get more students come back into her school. So she went to a seminar by Stephen R. Covey, and she took the principles of the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and incorporated them into their school and created a leadership school magnet. So I was inspired by this principle. And so what I decided to do, and I shared this with my faculty at the very beginning of the school year, is I was introduced to a book by Barbara Abbott, one of our second grade teachers, called The 7 Habits of Happy Kids. And this book takes the 7 habits but puts them in kid-friendly stories and other kinds of things like that. So every single month we are focusing on the habit at our school. So like September was being proactive. And so we are taking the principles there and trying to help our students. Because true leadership is really doing what's right when no one is looking. And so we want our students to not only learn the curriculum, we want them to make great decisions in life so that they can be successful. So I am presenting to the Cash Chamber on the 16th of October. This is really pushing me out of the edge again. I am going to present there with Shanna Longhurst and one of our teachers. So that's next. That's a week from today, isn't it? And I'm presenting to them, and we're going to try and partner up with a business here in Logan and have them help us sponsor us as a leadership school. And what we would want that money for is to get posters for our school, to be able to get quotes to put up in our school, to be able to really remind everyone that comes into our school that we are building leaders for the future. So that's what 7 Habits of Happy Kids.
That's fun.
So it's a lot of fun. It's our leadership focus this year.
Any other questions?
Focus on kids.
Okay. Thank you, Daryl. Tommy?
That's all right. I'll answer to anybody. That's no worries. So,
thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
it, Eric.
Thank you for being an essential piece of our success, too. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mike.
We're working on that area because somebody always feels.
I know. That's one person.
Ours is on the floor.
Figure out who did it.
I think it was my custodian who had to be the last one to put his piece in there.
We were early, so that we went with him, so that's why.
I just
keeping on track. So you're good.
No, you're late.
We were early.
We've just been ahead.
Because we want to go home early tonight.
Good. I'll talk faster, have less to say. our school improvement plan is, like everybody else's, I'm sure, kind of focused on language arts, math, and ESL. What we're doing a little bit more unique this year is really the result of the Europe grant that we've had. And when you're trying to address student needs, there's a couple of ways to do it. One is through instruction in the classroom, so you try to differentiate that portion of it, give teachers opportunities to teach to all different levels of kids. The other way to do it is also to differentiate the curriculum or the things that you offer to students. And so through that grant, part of what's reflected here in our school improvement plan is to try to offer programs or classes that would meet the needs of specific groups of students. And so one of the things that the grant has allowed us to do is to get our discovery program back in place. Jan Humphreys is now teaching in that program. She and Eric Newell took kids down to the Utah House today and the Air Force Museum, and the conversation with her afterwards is she said, I'd never fully appreciated the group of students that we're working with, and they really are students that are coming from all kinds of situations and various needs and lots of attention. So we are feeling success with that group of students and keeping them engaged in school and getting them on their way. The other thing that we continue to notice is not only an increase in our diverse population, but also an increase in the number of students that are still reading below grade level. And so addressing those needs, just knowing that if we don't capture them by the time they finish up eighth grade, that potential for high school dropout becomes greater and greater. So we've hired a full-time teacher into our literacy academy, which is really based on trying to reach some of our students that aren't at grade level, help them with their fluency and their comprehension to bring them back up to or at least move them further ahead than what they would be.
What kind of numbers are you talking about, Mike?
In that program, we have about 80 or 90 students. But then that's with our 7th and 8th grade, and then we have probably a comparable number in our 6th grade.
So is that a 4th, a 5th? How many, what percentage of that grade level are in that program?
Well, you figure if there's about 180 students, then we're talking maybe 15% of the population that are in the dire need stage that we really try to address that with.
Are those kids mostly move-ins or just haven't made it from elementary?
I don't think we could say that they're move-ins. I think it's just a variety of things. Some that just haven't made those connections, or maturation comes a little later, and for some one reason or another, we still haven't,
gotten
that. So
big job.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if the results are that way. But there's an effort there, and so the other portion of that is with our Literacy 6 class, which is a new addition. So we actually took out one of our technology classes in the 6th grade, moved everything up to 7th and 8th grade. And then introduced more focused reading in the 6th grade to try to address that with our struggling readers, and then also to give all of our 6th grade the exposure to textbooks and how to read. It's a
so
new experience.
So you're teaching reading.
Yeah, we really are teaching reading techniques on that. So those areas we've addressed. And the other area that we're trying to shore up is we've created a math academy, and we're capturing about 30 or 40 students each trimester in that math academy, where it's really an opportunity for those students to come back, get some further instruction, redo, get some help with what they didn't pick up the first time around. We're just trying to break down some of those barriers. I think a lot of times in mathematics it just becomes a block that I can't do it, my mom couldn't do it, my grandpa couldn't. we come from a long generation of non-math viewers. So, so anyway, just trying to break down some of those barriers, and we've taken part of that with technology, the use of technology to try and engage kids in a little bit different way, and also with teachers that are working with a little smaller group of students, and just using that patience and reteaching and opportunities for kids to get another go at it. So some of our students have two math classes during the day too to try to help with that. The third thing we're really working toward, we actually have wonderful technology in the school, and lots of opportunities either through computer labs or clickers or iPads or things, but it's just a constant struggle to continue to stay up with the technology and giving our teachers and our students both the opportunity to use it and learn it. So in the professional development information that you have on our school, we're really focused on just instructional strategies, and you can see the main focus that we're using this year is to take the thinking maps and get the visual connections and trying to incorporate reading and writing in all of our content areas through that. And then the other portion of that is to get our teachers the opportunity to look at instructional practices that are contained in the evaluation of the Big Eight practices. So that's kind of the connection with what we're trying to do with our recruitment plan this year. Had the opportunity to meet twice with our community council, so they had a chance, first of all, to look at it, provide input, and then come back and just look at any changes and sign off on it. We've presented our improvement plan to our department chairs, who are then presenting it to the rest the people in their departments. So I think as far as that goes, we've all had a chance to look at that, and then the connection that we've made with that with our trust line budgets. And so those trust line budgets, you know, I think we're trying to be very careful to make sure they support that school improvement plan. So
it's nice when you get the size, the amount that you get at a middle school. That's really helpful.
Yeah, it is.
To do something significant.
Do you have good participation in your community council, Mike?
We do, actually. We have 11 parents participating right now, which is the most we've ever had. And,
good.
It's been great attendance.
Good.
And they're very supportive. It's been a good way for us to communicate, because the idea of PTA hasn't worked as well at middle school, and for whatever reason. But parents do seem to be involved with the community council and then trying to get information out that way.
Good.
It's a nice cross-section, too, this year, which is really interesting. Yeah.
Good. Do you find that parents, I mean, are they all, you know, like parents of sixth graders and stuff, or is it more the higher end?
We have parents on that council that have been with us all 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and some longer. They've had multiple children come
through. Yeah.
And then we have some brand new ones. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
Appreciate
Thank
you.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Okay. John.
Let me go back to the beginning.
I don't know if we ought to introduce you again or not, but no,
Christy's
I think we
not
all.
Here. Christy's the one who hasn't met him yet.
Well,
thanks, John.
It's a pleasure to be with you. This is a lot less stressful than the last time I sat before
you. Oh, really? I didn't notice any stress at all.
No. Yeah, not on your end. As we've been looking, as you look at the plan that we've submitted, as we take a look at this being kind of new on the site, relied a lot on information that the teachers have shared with. And information I've been able to mine from what data is available to us. We're still, some of that data is still embargoed. As you look at our goals, compared to the goals that were set last year, Adams didn't quite achieve what we had hoped to achieve based upon last year's plan. We struggled in a few areas. And we've gone in to try to look at, okay, what are those areas that we really need to be aware of and that we need to be identifying for? And we have the four goals listed there. And as a Title I school, we primarily set up the goals based upon what we understand the new system to be. Because those are goals that we're going to, whether we articulate them in a plan or not, those will be the goals that are set for us. And so based upon what we're able to predict, we've kind of outlined that in the goal in terms of language arts map and particularly. And we've each school has its own trajectory, and we've set goals based upon what we predict our trajectory to be based upon the new system once it's made available to us, just in the presentations we had. Specifically, the area of greatest concern to me at Adams is the area of ESL. In some way, I think it's one of our greatest celebrations, and in one way, it's another area of concern. In terms of a celebration for us in Adams, in talking to the ESL teacher and the classroom teachers, Adams does a phenomenal job of getting our young children in grades K-1 to be fluent. Last year, almost all of the first grade students on the end of year UALPA test, which measures their language proficiency, they were almost all fours, which is fantastic for them to achieve so much gain in so little time. So we're really excited for that and to really recognize the great work that they do. What that does mean, however, is that then as our students get older, those students that are still not considered fluent as they get older are the students with the greatest need and the greatest challenges. Sometimes these are also students with special needs and things like that. So that's an area of greatest concern for me, is those students as they get older that are still ESL and are still struggling, what are we doing for them? And I'm concerned about the amount of growth that they're making each year and how can we turn that around. So that is an area of focus for us as a school. We've outlined some of the general professional development that we're doing on a whole school level in the plan that's similar to other schools. We've outlined goals on a broad school level in terms of the school improvement. One area that is extremely important to us, it's going to become a vehicle for us to get there, and I talk a little bit about that in the 10 questions that are there, is the use of our daily discussion with the school. I feel strongly that the need for us to really focus on and zero in with a laser-like focus on some of those individual students that really are struggling. For example, I've been able to identify those students that were not proficient in ESL in the upper grades. We know exactly who they are now. We can target specific interventions for them. And being able to track and monitor that in our daily discussions is a vehicle that we're looking forward to using. And as what the teachers have kind of indicated to me, they feel is, hey, this is really our next step of where we need to go to make our school better. So a lot of those things are going to be focused on by the kid, by the skill, individually following up and saying, all right, we targeted John. As part of this process, the teacher went in and they identified from the class list and what data was available to them, four or five students that they felt, these are the students that we really need to focus on that we can make the biggest gains on. And we're coming up with a plan for each of these students individually to monitor and track their progress and what they're doing. So that's exciting for us in that way. That will be the vehicle that drives us. We think Mastery Connect is going to really play into that because it's going to give us a tool to monitor the proficiency in mathematics, which is something that has really been missing for us as a whole. So we're excited about that, and we're putting that in play and building the infrastructure within the school to make that successful. That's kind of the process we've been through and where we're going with our plan in a nutshell. Are there any specific questions that need to be asked?
Is everyone using Mastery Connect?
In my building?
In district-wide.
No,
so
it's still in the pilot process.
Okay, so Adams is piloting it. Is anybody else?
Several other
Dave?
Schools are piloting it.
All schools are getting access to it. We are meeting each individual school's needs as they arise. Winthrop has a lot of interested teachers right now, but we're having trouble getting all of those students into the Mastery Connect format.
That would be nice to have a presentation on it sometime, just so we understand what it is. But
I understand.
But at least let's pretend like I understand.
Right. For those kids that are in that target group that are really failing, I suspect there's a number who are simply have given up, don't want to try. Is that true or not?
To some degree, I mean, there's always a little bit of learned helplessness in some of the students. So some of them are getting that point, but I'm excited to see that many of them are not.
Okay.
And some of the students that are actually doing okay have also acquired some of that learned helplessness. So it's not a mutually exclusive thing. So I've been impressed with the overall student population and how willing they are to work.
Okay. So you see potential for growth?
I do see potential for growth. There are some students in... We always know that there will be some students that, statistically, given the size of the school population, there will always be some students that are going to really struggle to grow. And that will be an issue. For example, we have some of our ELS students are also have very high special education needs. So then the question is the reason they're not progressing in ELL because they aren't acquiring the language, or is their learning disability keeping them from acquiring the language? What do we do there? And so then there's some discussions we need to have there infrastructure-wise as to where they fit in terms of the data and what issues Canada has and things like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Christy, this is John Tanner.
Oh, very nice to meet you. Oh, my God. You don't look familiar to me. Now I know why.
That would be why.
Yes.
Any other questions?
Thanks, John.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, Eric, do you want to come up?
Eric's done
your turn. I know, we're going to let him do it again. We're ahead, you know.
No, we're going to have. Sunday's not able to be here, but
yeah. Okay, Wilson.
Reading specialist.
Hi, Chris.
You look a little different. I know you're not Sunday.
Yes. Well, I'm probably going to forget my keys as I lay.
Oh, we'll remind you.
Do I need to move this down, or can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, you can move it down or whatever.
Can you hear me? I'm Joy Hayes. I'm a literacy coach, and I'm just representing Wilson tonight because Sunday is the class that she has missed. So hopefully I will know the answers to your question.
Okay.
We're trying to find the right page.
Nope, that's perfectly fine.
Which is always a challenge.
I must look back further. I don't remember now.
First one there, raise your computer.
You got the page?
47.
47.
40.
Yeah, it's around 45 to 47, depends on how you download it.
Okay. All right.
44.
Okay, you can go ahead. We're ready.
What do I need to do?
Okay,
just basically do an overview of what your goals are and anything that you're working on at this point. Take about 5 minutes, and then they may have some questions of you.
Okay. All right, well, our goals are, our first goal in language arts, Common Core, and we want to meet elementary, Wilf Elementary will meet AYP in language arts this coming year. Our math goal is that we will continue to meet AYP. Our ESL goal implementation plan, that our ELL students will make AYP for the 2012-2013 school year. And our fourth goal for behavior is all students will participate in positive school-wide behavior recognition programs. And we are in the midst of all these right now. All of our students have participated in the behavior recognition program. They've come through as grade levels and been trained on this. And they continue to come through monthly to meetings for that. And, of course, we're implementing the language arts Common Core. We're using our data to differentiate instruction. And we're using Thinking Maps, our new writing program, the Thinking Maps Writing, right from the beginning and beyond, guided reading groups for all of our grade levels. And, of course, working with parents through our parent universities, which we have whenever we have some kind of activity at our school. We have parent universities where we have parent training. So this coming week when we do FTPs, we'll have parent training then. Am I on the right track?
Mm-hmm.
Math, we want to be familiar as a school, both vertically and horizontally, with the math core. We're implementing the new Go Math curriculum along with Singapore strategies. And again,
are the teachers liking the Go Math?
From what I hear so far, yes.
Okay, cool. That's a nice change.
Yeah. I mean, I will have to be honest, though, like most of the concerns that come my direction as literacy coach are literacy concerns. But
last year, a lot of that kind, a lot of the things from math kind of came to my meetings as well because of frustration, and I haven't heard that this year. So that is a nice change. For our ELL learners, we are working really hard with them this year and every year, but just trying to, each year, try to learn from what we've done and what we can change and improve. We're wanting to increase their reading comprehension, fluency, and vocabulary development. And we're doing that through, we want to do more ESL parent universities. I think a lot of that part is communication with the parents and how they can work with their children at home. Identifying key vocabulary terms for the language arts and math common core and really make those available for all the classrooms, because we find that that constant area of vocabulary is really where they struggle. And we're implementing Words Their Way, Language for Learning, and Imagine Learning for those students, as well as a lot of our other students too. And we have the PAWS Behavior Program, which is going wonderfully. So, any questions?
What's PULSE data?
PULSE data is it's a program from the university, the School of the Future.
It's an extension of the ISQ.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I was going to go into a long explanation, but yes.
Okay.
Students can go in and just give feedback on their feelings about the kind of the school environment, mm-hmm. and their teachers and their friends.
One area, just tonight, I had emailed Sunday. We're going to have to probably, before the 23rd, work on the specifics on goal. AYP is no longer a consistent determinant for progress. So we need to have either developed on proficiency or on on the growth model that will be coming. So
So I noticed on our it would need to be something more measurable, such as, like, for math, the students will show 80% mastery on chapter and benchmark tests, or what you need to be more specific.
If you're going to be doing, you can still do it to end of level test, but you're going to need to look at either proficiency, 80% proficiency. Better to do growth. Some of the models they've looked at in terms of they will meet the growth target as defined by the new UCAS, which will be out this next week.
Well, the other thing I would suggest, and it's a little bit on some of the others, but specifically on yours, it's referred to as the Common Core throughout. And if that's on your trust land and legislators go on there, we have some legislators who do not like the term Common Core. It's Utah's core. So I would just do a word search on that and change. Yeah,
Utah Core Standards.
And anyway, okay. I think it would just be helpful for all of us if we can call it Utah Core Standards, just because that's a hot button for some people.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay.
I just have a question. Your AmeriCorps volunteers, have they found anyone, or what's happening with that? Do you know?
Yes, we have found volunteers, and we did training last Thursday. We did an evening training, and then Friday we did a training. What time was that? Like an after? No, it was during the day. It was morning. And then we offered one yesterday afternoon.
So they did find enough.
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yes, we're still searching. You know, I had somebody come in today, and he said, "I'm available every day of the week, but only if you need me." And I was like, we need you.
So how many do you have? Are you in need of more?
Definitely, always. So right now we have, I think, about 30. Well, yeah, but then we even had a few more come in today that weren't on that original list.
All right.
But yes, because when you consider that they come in maybe for an hour a couple times a week, we definitely have the need for any kind of one-on-one help that we can get from the community. So they've been working it very hard trying to get volunteers.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I will pass that information on to okay. Sunday. And
That needs to be in by next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Actually, next Tuesday, because Wednesday you guys won't be here.
There you go. Okay. Tuesday. Will do. Thank you.
And we. Okay. Shane.
I'm up.
You're up. We're happy to see you.
Go to the end.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm standing upright.
Then that's what we love to see.
We went to just as sad a game for us as we watched here. Your football game that you went to on Friday night. I was just sad about the one you were at as the one I was at. So.
You know, it was an offensive miracle. Holy cow. So I got to tell you, it's pretty funny because my wife and I are in our Utah State sweatshirts and we're sitting here and we took two of our sons and they're wearing BYU clothes. And they're sitting there and my son who's nine is sitting right next to my wife and all of a sudden I look over and he's, you know, we're crammed in there. There's not room to move. But he's a good foot away from her. And I look and she kind of looks down and he looks at both of us and he's like, this is the line. Don't cross. So I let him know that because BYU won, that was his birthday present and he cannot expect any other.
And Suzanne was probably dressed like you should.
What was wrong with Friday night?
Yeah. You didn't see any problems with that?
Both places, you were happy, huh?
No, I'm kidding. I'm just playing off.
I know you're right.
Sure.
Yeah.
We know which team your husband scores. Which team your son's on and which team your husband coaches.
I was kidding.
We know.
But I was okay with the 6-3. Well, no, I wasn't. But
you're always happy when they play one another. You come out a winner.
That's a whole different story.
Well, I did a little presentation for you, so.
Okay. Oh.
Answer some of those questions.
Walk us through what you're using to do the presentation.
I'm using a presentation, online presentation thing called Prezi. And it is one of, when you talk to the kids, they say PowerPoint is old and boring, but they like Prezi and you'll see it. It zooms in a little bit and stuff like that. So since this is new to me and I have not had to present to you guys before on a school improvement plan, and with all the pitfalls that everybody else has had of barely having their community council elected and trying to have meetings in the last 2 weeks, I actually just ran from our community council meeting so that we were able to actually discuss some of these things. And so with that being said, I wanted to give you a little bit of a recap of how we got here. So the first thing that we created as a high school administration is we came up with what we call our guiding principles. The four guiding principles that we came up with is it good for students, is it ethical and kind, is it fiscally responsible, and is it supported by research? And we thought, you know what, that pretty is encompassing. I think I've shared that with you guys, but we feel like it applies to our school improvement plan too. We want to make sure that the things that we're doing are focused on student success, focused on being ethical and kind, making sure that we're fiscally responsible on the things that we're doing, and that everything that we are suggesting and recommending that we do, research can back it up. And so again, even looking at those guiding principles, again, our vision and our mission, we've talked about those, but that guiding principle was the big one. So the first thing that we needed to do in creating a school improvement plan was we wanted to look at what does the data tell us? Where are we? If we're going to improve and go someplace, we kind of need to know where we're at. And so in our last professional development day that we had with the staff, we did some great jobs of looking at our data and looking at what our data is telling us. I'm new to the world of Utah assessment pieces, so I had to be brought up to speed on the CRT piece, which we'll discuss here in just a minute. But one thing that I know is part of our land trust, is that right?
School land trust.
Is that our community council has supported us bringing in a teacher to do enrichment, and that would be our AP calculus. Without that, we weren't going to be able to staff enough for the AP calculus. So last year, the community council decided to bring that in and to look at that enrichment. So we wanted to look at AP scores, you know, as one piece of our data. Are we providing enough enrichment for that kid that is bored in class because he already knows it? And a lot of people don't recognize that that student is just as at risk as the kid who can't read. And so we need to make sure that we're addressing all ends and the middle of the spectrum to making sure that we're getting all of our kids the growth that they need in order to be successful. So we look at this, and I know that when the paper contacted Grant, he was great. He's the one that's been keeping all these numbers. You know, the number that stuck out to me, because everybody's like, oh, we went from 82% down to 74%. We've got fewer kids that are passing our AP test. Well, but look, we went from 292 kids taking the test to 548.
And that's what the paper didn't bring out.
Right. So, you know, that
it was sent to them.
That's almost 250 more tests that were taken. I asked the counselors to break that down a little bit more for us. So as a staff, we knew the demographics. This was great information for us because of that increase, a huge portion of that increase comes from our minority populations and those that are not traditionally taking AP tests. And so when they looked at 2008 and 2009, I believe, those were the years where they decided to do away with the 3.5 GPA requirement to get into an ACT test.
AP test,
thank you. And I was just informed of that tonight. So that was kind of the year where they moved away from a prerequisite to be in an AP test. If somebody wants to take AP biology versus regular biology, by all means, let's let them try it. Let's let them push themselves. Let's let them raise up to that higher expectation. We were just talking about some schools that I've looked at and in inner city schools that are doing away with general curriculum altogether. And if you take biology, you take AP biology. If you're taking a fourth year of math, you are in AP calculus. I mean, they don't have an option for other things. They've just set that as the expectation. And they talk about how amazing it is to see students that are in a lower socioeconomic group that are coming in from a minority family life excelling and doing well, because that's just the expectation as you do that. So we want to continue to raise that, and we want to raise the overall pass rate with those 548 tests that we're now administering. When we look at our CRT scores, this has just been released. I guess this hasn't fully been released yet, has it?
This is under the old system of UCAS, which is the new process, is not out yet, and there will be a month's review before it's given.
And we haven't seen any CRTs at all at the board.
Well, that we're waiting for the UCAS in order to.
So this is nice to see.
So maybe I need to zoom past it. All right. you know, like I said, I was new to the CRT thing. And so that math was a huge issue for me when I looked at that. And so we went and had discussions with our math department and said, you know, what's going on? Explain this to me, and I just need to know where we're at. We always talk about data tells us where we are, not who we are. And we want to know where we are. And it was interesting when it was explained to me that we were one of the districts that piloted Math 1 and Math 2 for the last 2 years in the Utah core curriculum. And other districts in the state did not pilot it. So the state was still making the schools take Algebra 1 and Geometry tests. Those that were piloting the Math 1, those kids didn't take any CRTs. So that's the bulk of our freshmen and the bulk of our sophomores that ended up not taking the CRTs. According to my knowledge, and if somebody, if I need to be corrected, I'm great with that too. But when we looked at that, they said that this year they are going to give the algebra, or the Math 2 kids the Algebra 1 test. Anyway, when I looked at the numbers, so just based upon that, we, in the numbers that were presented to us, we certainly did not have, every student was not represented in Math CRTs. Assuming that we had 1,600 kids, we were well below, I want to say 800 that had a CRT score in there.
Right.
So, I mean, we're half the kids that we have at the school that aren't being registered in the CRTs.
That's been consistent regardless of years.
Okay.
Because of...
They've always done algebra and geometry.
Up until this last year, they only did algebra and geometry, algebra 1 and geometry. This year, this past year, they added algebra 2.
Okay.
So
and
none
so
of the
our kids haven't been there.
Ever
so all the higher end kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the low end of the kids get tested.
Yeah. Shane, can you go back to that real quick? Why is the Logan district, is that compared with,
if you
is
look,
the middle school state, added into that?
It,
even though the
it is. That middle one, it would be everyone who took Algebra 1 gets grouped into mm-hmm.
Algebra
math.
1, so geometry, and Algebra 2.
So that's the middle school.
So it will include middle school.
Some middle school. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So we looked at the ACT, and I think I've voiced this to you guys too. I'm a big proponent of the ACT. I think it gives us some great information. All of our 8th graders take the Explore test. All of our 10th graders take the Plan test. And now all of our juniors take the ACT. It gives us some great longitudinal data looking at kids' growth, looking at that. The nice thing that I find with the ACT that I have not found in the CRT reports is with ACT, I can drill down and look at students in the math, how they did on numbers and operations, how they did on algebraic expression. And then ACT has everything laid out for you to say, if you want to move them from this band to this next band, here are the skills that they need to be developing, and here are some possible activities to help you do that. And so I think it's a great thing, one thing that we want to look at. In order to be considered college and career ready, we use that, and I think as you've read through our improvement plan, we use the term college and career ready. That is actually a comprehensive guidance term that ACT happens to use the same way. So when we're talking about it, we're talking about the big picture, not just ACT. But ACT says college and career ready happens with, in English, you have to score an 18. In the math, you have to score a 22. In the social studies, you have to score a 21. On the reading test, and on sciences, you need a 24 to be college career ready for a college level biology class. So, you know, there are things. We're right about where the state is, but if you go back to what our vision is we want to not be right where the state is. We want to be the premier school. And so that's why we need to be doing some additional work on that. When we look just at the raw numbers, this kind of gives us the five-year trends. All this data is from last year's graduating senior class. So the bottom two lines, as was explained to me, would be the 2 years that show the juniors who were taking it all together. So every junior taking it.
Where we have all juniors, we're still in the state. But that is not the case.
But we've been doing that for how many years now?
4 years, but it's only been, this is only the third year of the, that first year the scores wouldn't have counted, so this would be the second year. So of the okay. 4 years we've done it, we now have 3 years okay. of data.
So that's kind of what we did. Now our process was, when we talked about this with the staff, we dove in a lot deeper than just looking at some of these superficial things. And we started to look at some of the areas, our socioeconomic levels. We started looking at student with disabilities. We started to look at all the subpopulations and where that's going. I do not feel that we have looked at our data well enough to really know exactly where we are. And I just want to be honest with you that I think that's where we are, is that we have just really started now, within the past 3 weeks, to really start looking at our data. And I would anticipate that things are going to change, and already from visiting with our community council, they would like for us to address the next set that I'll go over is what our goals are and what we want to see an increase in. Our community council, members of that feel like we're not being aggressive enough, that we need to be upping that ante just a little bit there. So that's where we are. Now, where do we want to go? Based upon this superficial look at what we were doing, we came up with, we want to increase our students' college and career readiness, going by the comprehensive guidance term, not the ACT term. But ACT would be one of those points that we would expect a 2% gain. Our CRTs, we would expect to see a 2% gain. So looking at all the various elements, we want to say every assessment that we're giving our kids, we want to see a 2% gain.
But you're not going to do that math CRT because it doesn't really measure, you're not going to use it.
Well, no, I'm going to address that one here. So the 2% is for our language arts CRTs, language arts ACTs, and our math ACTs. Those were the levels where we were really right even with the state, but we wanted to increase it. We want to jump 5% in the math ACT. And that was because part of that is, and maybe this might have needed to say math CRT, huh? I think it's supposed to be CRT. And the reason we want to do that was knowing that if our math 2 kiddos get to take the Algebra 1 test, they feel like we're going to get a greater gain. So... And then looking
at... One of the reasons for the difference between the ACT is that next year's ACT, this year's junior, so you're looking at the score this year compared to last year. Those kids have already taken that.
That's
the majority
right.
of them take the test. There's very little impact that you can have from last year to this year.
You know, I think we're still trying to understand the growth model that the state is coming up with, and so in the conversations that I was asking, this was a number that somebody said, hey, if your kids could make a 10-point growth, it's in most cases, and I think it's so individualized that it can't be generalized, but they were generalizing, a 10-point growth would be very similar to a 2-year increase. And I don't know, I have to ask the math guys if that's...
Well, once we get to DUCAS, we'll have to look, because there are some targets. 10 means something different under the new growth than it does under the old growth. That would have been very appropriate for last year's growth model. This year we may have to look at it. We need to recalculate it for the new model.
So knowing that's where when we have started talking about these numbers, we wanted to say, you know what, we don't want to be constricted to these. Honestly, they may be low, and if that's the case, we're going to up them, you know, because we're not about just doing the bare minimum. We're going to up them, but I think until we really understand our data better, we get a growth model, it's really hard for me, at least, to really say I'm comfortable with saying this is exactly where we should be, but I think it is a starting point. I think it's a place for us to go and for us to be looking at. So how are we going to get there? And this is really talking about the process that we use to get to this point. And as I supplied in that letter and talking about things, we started with our responsive school teams and our departments, really looking at what fits within your curriculum right now that you can just increase a few strategies to increase your reading and literacy comprehension. How can you address math in PE? Now, those were some great discussions. How do you do math in PE? And PE people, I was one, so PE people, they're smarter than we give them credit, you know, because they came up with some great things of well, we play this game, and they need to know how to measure the field, and they need to know that if they're playing international, the difference between meters and feet, and you know, really addressing math concepts. That is the measurement strand right there. And so even the PE department getting into, okay, well, hey, we need to be doing a better job of reading. Why aren't our kids keeping journals in their health class? You know, and so it really has created some great discussions on what the action plans are going to be to support our goals. And so from that, we were able to assemble that, come up with these draft documents that we have given out to you guys, and to start going. We know that we're going to rewrite these goal statements in the next 2 weeks. Okay, so the goal statements are very broad. We just tonight have talked about some of those percentages. We need to take it back to the staff. We also included our student House of Representatives. They're completely, when Mrs. Lowe was explaining this stuff to them, they glazed over. They didn't want to see it. But at the same time, we feel like we need to continue to do that. And eventually, it's going to just become a part of what we do as the students being involved in their own data and looking at it at the high school level. They're smart enough to know what it is we're talking about and know what they can do to help everybody progress as well.
Well, and let's have this, just as we want to be the best football team or soccer team, we want to have the best. We're going to do all we can to promote excellence in this.
Right.
Go ACT prep.
So when we look at, this is our reading, and really we set up three objectives. The first is that we want to address tier one. What's happening in the regular classroom? And we started with some great professional development at the beginning of the year as we were talking about the Utah core curriculum. We also started talking about the teachers that went to the RAISE conference, which is Reading Apprenticeship in Secondary Education. And I got to go down with them, and that was awesome. The groups that went to that did a presentation, and we had some different sessions that the staff got to go through. One of the main things that I know that Bo Roundy presented was word walls and how easy it is to create a word wall. I have been tickled to walk around our classrooms and see how many more word walls are showing up. Every week there's a new word wall in a teacher's classroom. And we're starting to use some of the strategies that research tells us are good for kids. And so when we look at these, I think a lot of these strategies apply to our ESL population as well when we talk about reading. Because if we can teach good reading, it's going to address the kid that's the advanced reader, the kid that's just right on track in reading, and the kid that's struggling.
And our kids have had that, at least in elementary, they've had the word walls and the other things, so it's something they should be acquainted with.
Yeah. Gordon Geddes and Deanna Stallings, they did a thing on gallery walks, and it's just another strategy for reading. I've had teachers say, hey, I'm doing a gallery walk, come look at it, and come walk, do it with us. You know, and it's great having the students give students feedback on the readings that they've done. And so, you know, I think we're in a right direction. We're starting to do some of these things that will increase our basic teaching in every single class. So each department was asked to go out and establish what those goals are going to be. We're now visiting with our staff members, and they are to provide for us a goal to support the reading in their own classroom, their reading objective for their department as well. And so we're breaking that down one more section and providing that teacher accountability to themselves about, if my department said that we're going to teach measurement in PE, what's my goal going to be? How am I going to measure that? How am I going to know if I'm teaching measurement well enough? The second point in there is understanding our data and establishing which data we want to use. When we start looking at interventions, I think it's really important that we have, they call it triangulation of data, having at least three data points to identify something rather than going off of just one. And we want to establish that so that we know what it is that we're going to be using and how we can use it. One thing that we are doing to help support that is we have some teachers, am I already over? As we're having teachers go to an ACT interpretive workshop. And there they go in and they teach you how to use the Explore and the Plan and the ACT much better so that you can actually start to interpret the data and understand how to put all those pieces together. So that's one element in there that we want to do. We also want to increase the knowledge that our students have of the new growth model. And I'll be honest, it scares me. As I listened to the gentleman from the state present it, and it made sense. And then the minute that the next day, I'm like, so if I'm sitting here, who am I being compared to? I think it's just, it's a very large concept for a lot of people to understand. And so we want to make sure that we're getting the right people in to explain that to them. And then the third element is that we want to create some interventions. We want to start helping the kid when they need help, rather than waiting until they fail the class, sticking them back in the same class, and telling the teacher to talk slower and louder. You know, that doesn't work. So we need to create the interventions that can address the students' needs on a skill level basis as we go. And so our goal is to really start looking at that and seeing how that is involved in the various elements that we have. If you notice, our language arts and our math were almost identical because it's still those same strategies. The things that changed were the PD that we're doing. One thing that was not included in there because I haven't been able to visit with Robin about is what the Utah Core summer workshops are going to be this next year, because we want to make sure we're including those in here, that we want our teachers to be attending those trainings that they're doing. But not knowing, I didn't know exactly which content areas were going to be covered this next year. So really our math plan is almost identical. This is our English language learner plan. And one thing that we wanted to do was make sure that we had enough support for them. This is something that our community council was very adamant about at the conclusion of last school year, as I visited with people there, is that they wanted to make sure that school trust land money was going to be able to help the ESL kids. And what was proposed there was that we increase our aides and that opportunity to have the support for them inside their classrooms. So they're not going to class being lost, trying to wait until they get to their ESL class to understand what was going on. So that's my understanding of how that would be used. And then we want to do increased reading comprehension and competency through that same reading strategies that were a part of our first plan. And then our final and fourth goal has to do with communication. We wanted to improve the mode of communication to you guys, to our public, to our students, to our teachers, and to their parents. I've really got to talk with Mike Monson. Have you guys seen his webpage?
At the middle school?
Yeah, the middle school webpage is amazing. I mean, it truly is. It's
you can find out what's happening on it.
So, you know,
that's not the case.
I'm real happy to tell you, though, that the Logan High School administrative webpage should be out this week or next week by fall break for sure. And part of that, the largest part of that is actually our calendar. So everybody can be aware of
it. So it's not just athletics anymore.
No, we've got our fine arts activities on there. We've got the meetings that we're having. And so all of that is going to be published through Google Calendar is what we've been learning and trying to get everybody on. So it's going to be fun when we can finally roll that out.
We'll just click off. Will you just click on that on the normal Logan High webpage?
You know,
It
will be a separate page, but the goal is that we will have a link on directly on the main page that's there. Russ Weeks, bless his heart, he's been the one that has been really manning the Logan High School webpage, and he's swapped with trying to teach new curriculums and he's always just kind of done it when he had time and has always been willing to do that. So I feel like we need to free him up because the poor guy is doing a great job of everything that he's doing. And to keep piling that on. So we're hoping that we'll be able to evolve the whole website eventually by the end of the year to maybe be something that multiple people can be trained in. So that's our first goal, is to really work on that website throughout the year, calendar being the first thing that we wanted to get out and publish. Second thing was, we've got more parents that are asking us to use social media. So we've created a Twitter account, we've created a Facebook page, and every day we get new followers. So it's kind of fun to see and get people responding and people providing some great information in themselves. And of course, we had the most activity during homecoming week, but that was there. And so my goal is, right now I'm doing both of those. My goal is to cross-train as well, so that eventually I don't have to be doing all that as well, and that we could have people that are tweeting in or putting stuff on Facebook wherever they are. You know, when our choir goes down to the state music choir thing, you know, wouldn't that be awesome if as soon as they're done, we get to find out they scored a 5? You know, so it's not just athletics. We want to use that to do all those things. But there's your plug. Saturday at 7 o'clock in the tabernacle is where our choir is going to be performing this next week. So it'll be way fun.
Do you have tickets?
Yeah, it said the stuff from Eric said it had to have tickets, but they're free. They're free, so get online and get them.
And the final part was just that calendar to make sure that we're including all of our events in our events. That's what we created for our school improvement plan. I hope we're on the right direction and the right page and moving forward. And just as I talked with our community council, I said, you know what, I don't feel like this is going to be the best school improvement plan, and it's not really something that we feel that we are, you know, addressing everything that we need to be and everything like that. But we basically, as they voted and it was unanimous to support this plan, the comment was just made as we were talking that we really want to change the perception of what our school improvement plan is at Logan High School. It's not something that we come, get approved in order to get our school land trust money and jump through the hoops.
Never look at it.
You know, our intent is that this becomes a living document. And what that means is that it's probably going to be tweaked and changed, and we know that what the state will have and everything that needs to come to you guys will come to the board. But at the same time, it needs to be a living document rather than something that's filed on the shelf. And that needs to be a living document for everybody involved in our school. So we intend to have it published and everything, and still looking for feedback. And as we talk, our goal is that we will have our school improvement plan will be in place by the end of the school year for next year. You know, because we're already working towards it. Now, we may not have all the data pieces that we want to have, but hopefully we're looking at data throughout the whole year that nothing's going to surprise us. We can anticipate what it's going to be. Sorry, I talked long.
No, it's great.
I got a comment, Shane.
Yes.
A commendation.
Okay.
Last Saturday, I went down and watched the Beehive Bonanza debate competition awards.
Yeah.
And Logan High School took first place overall and a lot of individual awards. The reason I was there, I have a grandson that's on the debate team from Cottonwood High School.
Yeah.
And so I just bring that out as a commendation.
Yeah.
Maybe you weren't even aware of that. I don't know.
You know what? I knew that they had high school, but I didn't know they took first.
First place overall.
That's awesome.
And I was able to look at that. It was kind of neat.
So we've got to get some debaters tweeting before they go tell all the rest of their competition.
Yeah, and you need to recognize them.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, and I noticed that you have several new members on the community council.
We do.
And how's that going to, I mean, did you replace staff members on the community council as well as the new members, and then who did they elect as their chair?
Our chair is Wayne Dodd. He was elected last year before the end of the year. Our new council members, Lisa Hopkins is coming back. So she was reelected. Jay Aguilar, Todd Cottle, and Peterson. Mrs. Peterson.
Angie?
No.
Oh, not that Peterson. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Mrs.
Peterson.
Miss Peterson.
She's definitely Mrs. Peterson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Linda. Is it Linda? Sorry. I met her for the first time.
And what about your staff members?
Yeah, they kind of did, and we have two that wanted to return. Alma Brown and Randy Clough. And new is Donna Starley, representing counseling. And honestly, we're still trying to see if we can find somebody for a fourth position, and myself.
Yeah. Well, I noticed on the ballot that you had, what was his name? Is it Ortiz?
Uh-huh.
Eduardo.
Eduardo.
And I understand he didn't make the elect, but if you ever had a need to have his assistance, he would be very...
That's what he voiced to us when we contacted him. So, matter of fact, everybody did. Everybody that we were able to directly speak with were just volunteering and wanting to help in any way that they could.
He's a good connection with, if you need Hispanic interpretation, he's always very willing to help in every capacity. Well, what am I?
Any other questions? Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate all you do.
Thanks for the presentation. That was great.
You bet. Figured then you'd be looking at it rather than me.
It was very informative. That's good.
Okay. We'll now have a discussion on dual immersion, and that'll be by Marshall.
Okay, I'll start out the process and then turn it over to Eric. Just wanted to keep you up to date of what the committee has been doing and what we're looking at. The process in the district, the process we chose was to, again, when parents came with concerns last spring, we committed that we would put together a committee, which has been chaired by Jed and by Eric, co-chaired, and really having the discussions about what would the impact be and what's the potential of having a dual immersion program within the district. Statewide, it has gone much faster than what was anticipated. Utah now leads the nation in immersion and dual immersion opportunities for students. There have been hiccups along the way. There have been bumps along the way. And so one of the processes that I gave in terms of the overall expectation is that we would look at and make sure that we were dealing with the concerns that had come up in other places so that we can learn from that. And we may have other things that come up, but do all that we can to learn. And goes different directions or modify so that, especially when it came to staff, one of the concerns that had come up in a lot of districts was there was not a lot of dialogue with staff prior to or any information to them prior to a final decision being made. We started that out. I sent you what was sent out to all elementary staff. We're going to be working at getting meetings together. Hillary Stevens from the UNISER director, and I will be going and working with individual first grade or any teachers that have questions, because we want to learn from those questions, because that allows us then to be better in terms of making sure that as we come to you with a presentation in December, we have nailed down all the specifics. The devil's in the details, and we want to make sure that we have a very detailed plan in terms of the direction that we're going. So with that, I'll turn some time over to Eric as to what conversations have been had, what type of research has been done up to this point, and some of the things that we still need to do within the next couple of months, and then offer opportunities for you to ask questions. Yeah.
All right. Over.
you know, as Marshall said, I don't want to repeat anything that Marshall said. I think he did a great job, and I want to give a lot of credit to Marshall for doing this the right way. Anytime you look at a program like this, you want to make sure that you are looking at every single angle, every single detail, to make sure that this is what's best for kids. And that was really kind of been our guiding direction as we've looked at dual language immersion. So I'll just kind of maybe go back a little bit and talk to what we've done recently and then kind of go backwards to the spring. Just recently, within the last week, Ed, Bruno, and I took a team of parents and teachers down to visit three schools, one down in Canyons District, one in Alpine, and also one in Provo District. And so we went down and visited there. And what, for lack of, you know me, it's the way I am, I love David Letterman, so I'm going to give you a top 10 list of things that we learned from that visit, which I think will really help show the process that we have gone through. So number 10, we really feel like this program is what's good for our students. As we went to the three schools, both Jed and I and the parents and the teachers observed students not only speaking languages that were not native to their particular, for the most part, to their particular language level, but they were learning in a second language, which to me is awesome. It was amazing to see. In my case, I saw two Portuguese schools. I saw students who were speaking Portuguese, but they were learning that. So it was really cool. Number 9, this has really been a grassroots movement. I had a group of parents, about 5 to 6 parents, come in and see me in spring. And they also came to Marshall, and they came to some of our other principals, and they came to you, the board. And they said, we just want to explore this. We would like to look at this. And so this has really been a grassroots movement coming and spurred on by parents. And what I found in talking to the parents at the schools, because I wanted to make sure I talked to every single person I could. I stopped teachers in the hall, and the person who facilitated the visits had us talk to a couple parents. And I found that they put their students into dual immersion programs for many different reasons. One, it might be the language. You know, if it's a Spanish dual immersion, maybe they speak Spanish at home, maybe they have a Hispanic heritage. And one parent said, I was just too lazy to teach in Spanish. And so we think that this dual immersion would be great. We found that from a couple parents. But for the most part, parents were putting in the program because it didn't matter what the language was. They saw the benefits in the cognitive and the cultural awareness of helping their students be ready for 21st century learners and also to be ready for jobs that are available in the 21st century. Number 8, our committee has been meeting since the spring, and I really want to, again, commend our committee members. The committee members have included teachers, parents, principals, and district office representation. And I know at my school, I have informed my staff of these meetings throughout the whole process. Now, not a lot have come, but at the same time, it has opened conversations within our staff to be able to talk to our staff members. Number 7, and this deals with personnel issues. There are personnel issues that we need to look at when we look at dual language immersion. The teachers who are brought in to teach dual language immersion are native speakers, and they speak the language fluently. In the two schools that I visited, one was a returned missionary from Brazil, and the other was a native speaker from Brazil. The school that Jed went and visited, they were international guest teachers, which means they were actually from Spain, and they came over and they taught in the school. And his school was further into the process than the schools I went to, and it was 1 through 5 at the school that Jed visited. And he was very poignant and very candid about what is the impact on staff, what is the impact on personnel. And in that particular school that he went to, they have, and in the whole dual language immersion, and there are over 70 programs in the state of Utah, not one teacher has ever lost their job because of the dual language immersion. Now, there have been staff members that have been moved within the existing school, moved grade levels to make room for that that dual language immersion teacher. Very few have been moved to other schools within the district, but no teacher has ever lost a teaching position because of it. And that is, as I talk to staff, that seems to be their biggest concern. They want to make sure that, you know, first of all, they have a job, and second of all, that, you know, there's minimal impact. And I think, you know, Marshall has come and spoke to our community council specifically, there was a first grade teacher in that meeting, and he was answered it very, I thought, very candidly. He says every attempt will be made to minimally impact the teachers in our existing schools. Number seven.
Six.
Thank you. one thing we really learned is that the lottery system, because I think we're going to have a huge, as we look at this and we make a recommendation to you in December, and if we go ahead and go into an emergency, we're going to have a huge response, not only from students within our district, students outside of our district, students from charter schools, students that are homeschooled. You know, I've had parents, just a couple in the last couple of weeks, say when they came up and moved in Cache Valley, the first thing they looked for was, where are the dual language immersion schools? Well, currently there are none. And so I'm very excited that we are looking at becoming the first. Now, the county is also looking at doing this and doing it in four schools. And so I think that's a good thing. I think this is a program that that should be done all over the county.
So will the lottery favor students from our district first?
You know, typically what the way in the three schools that we visited is we talked to Greg Roberts from the USOE. The district will kind of determine how we do the lottery. The two schools that I visited, they didn't have to do a lottery because they just got just enough people to sign up on the spot that they had. They indicated to us, though, if we're the first schools in the county, we're going to have a lot of interest. So to start the program in first or second grade, whatever the grade levels they start, they suggest a minimum of 50 students. You, as a district and as schools, we can determine which percentage of those would come from inside of the school boundaries. Let's just use a number, 50%. So 25 of those students would come from, let's use Hillcrest as an example, Hillcrest boundaries. Then the other 25, we could open that up to out of school boundary. And that could be from within Logan City, it could be from Cache County. And then if there are more people who express interest than the 25 spots we have available, then those numbers would go to the district. The district would have a lottery. Every student's assigned a number. They would randomly choose the number. And then the existing students that didn't make it would be put on the waiting list in case students could not.
So there's like three lotteries.
There's one lottery, but the process is done. So the process is a three-step process.
Right.
Inner school, inner district, and then outside of district.
And wasn't one of the recommendations that the district office
yes.
handle that so that it's
right.
it's not perceived as that Eric has favorites or whomever's dealing with it, but it's the district office and it's like a school choice application.
Correct.
And in Jed's school, the secretary of the school was in the lottery and her child was not chosen. But yeah, that was not uncomfortable because the principal wasn't the one who made the decision. It was just It was a true lottery.
One question I have, Eric. If we have a student, say that's was chosen, they wanted to do it, and they went along, and there was, for some reason, say they were struggling to gain the language, how long do you let them stay in until, or do you replace them? Do you keep working with them? What happens?
We asked that question of the schools. They said that was a teacher and a parent, you know, they kind of left that open mm-hmm. to the teachers and the parents to kind of make that decision.
Okay.
They encourage, they want success in the program.
Sure.
And to be able to be successful. And, you know, they did say that happens occasionally, you know, students for whatever reason or, you know, and people move out, right, of the program also. So that's why the numbers in the initial are larger than your average class size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in first grade, our average class size is probably 20, 21 in the district. This would be 25, 26. And so you do that kind of knowing that there might be some natural attrition there.
Okay. I guess another question, say we had, I'm just throwing out.
Yes, please.
Say in our own district, we had 200 kids who wanted to do it. if this is successful after 1 year, or am I jumping way ahead? Would we see that go to other schools?
That is actually what happened in Park City School District. They started with two schools, and the numbers were so great as they started looking at all the other schools, they actually went district-wide in their elementaries with it. So we'll have to see exactly what the interest is within the district and what we're looking at, and then determine from that point. We are looking at, right now, tentatively, the recommendation was to try it in two sites to begin with, and then go from there and see exactly how it builds. A single one makes it a little more difficult. If you do have challenges later on, if you have two, there's a potential of collapsing later on and doing some things. So, plus you've got the ability to do some cross training and cross work within. So, those are the discussions.
What the second one would be?
Pardon?
Have we determined what?
We have not determined any of the schools. I don't know if one of your points is size of school for programs.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. Dual language immersion has been done in small schools. It's been done in large schools. The school that Jed went and visited, there were three sections in every single grade level, 1 through 5, and they were able to make it work. The ones that I went to had a little bit bigger school size, but it still, at the same time, there were only three sections in first grade in the ones that we went and visited. Ideally, you would want at least three sections in your grade levels, just because that does allow for a little bit of movement.
Three sections per in dual immersion?
Grade no. First grade.
Having three first grades, of which you'll have
two English or two traditional and one dual immersion. Not three, it'd be
two sections of dual immersion and one section of a regular.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Because you switch half a day.
That's
to
right.
Because they have 50, there's three teachers there, two are in the dual immersion, and they would take 50.
Once again, just using my school as an example, because that's what I know, but we have 88 kindergarten or first graders right now, so if you had 50 students in the dual immersion, that would be 38 students that would
be in.
So you have 19 in each.
And they currently have four sections. So
we have four sections.
Four sections is really optimum if you have it per grade level, because then you've got some flexibility on both sides in case you get move-ins who are not going to be in the program, especially as you get into the higher grades.
Yeah, and one of our challenges is the higher grades, because, we don't have as many fifth grades as we have first grades.
So if someone came in from a different district and they were Spanish-speaking in their home, could they test in and start the program in third or fourth grade, or do they have to be required to start it at first grade?
Originally, when they started dual language immersion, there was kind of a test-in kind of procedure. They've done away with that because they thought, why are we doing that? Why would we limit this to students? Why would we do that? The only maybe caveat there is on a two-way Spanish dual language immersion program, which is something that we've looked at, you need to have 33% of the students in there that are native or heritage speakers. Native speakers means that they, they speak Spanish. Heritage means that maybe they lived in a Latin American country for a couple of years with their family, for example. And then as students might drop out, you can always have native or heritage speakers come in and take their place, because they would already have the background and the language background to do that. So that is one advantage of having a two-way Spanish program.
Normally you would not have a student who was a non-native speaker go into the program. I think the recommendation after second grade, there would be no additional new children going into the program.
Unless they spoke the language. Mm-hmm.
But they could.
Yes.
If they moved into your school district and they were fluent in Spanish,
yes,
they could start fourth grade in that program.
Yes.
And at which time you probably wouldn't have a lottery, you'd probably...
That would be actually part of the rules. We would have to have... That would be part of the rules of entry.
How to add in,
right,
in later.
Another thing which I thought was really interesting is all three schools had in their contract that if they had a sibling who was already in the program, that their younger brother or sibling... brother or sister was automatically included.
Similar to the charter school lotteries.
Yes. And the purpose there is that they found real advantage if they're talking
each
to
other,
their brother or sister at home. And so that was one of those, as you get further down, a couple more years,
you have a third grader and you have a kindergartner or first grader coming in, that they're automatically in the program.
So you're doing math in Portuguese at home.
Right. All right, can I keep going with my top 10?
Sorry.
These are great questions. No, these are great. And I already mentioned staff concerns, but that was one that I think is just really important for us to look at. We want to make sure we are very responsive to staff concerns. We know that anytime you make a change or anything like that, that there are going to be concerns that come up. We want to make sure we're very responsive to that. And I think Marshall, under his direction and leadership, has really helped us be able to do that. But I'm not saying we're all there yet. There are still, and I love that Marshall, and you know, this is kind of the advice of the committee, to be able to go and meet with the first grades, because they're going to be the first ones that are going to be affected by this. And we want to make sure that they know the realities of dual language immersion, not just the things that they've heard. We want to make sure that they have all the information. Number three, one thing I learned, and Jed learned too, hiring the right person to be your dual language immersion teacher is key to the success of your dual language immersion. In one of the schools that I went to, this was a master teacher. She was a first year teacher, but she was a master teacher. And she was not only teaching Portuguese to the students, she was teaching math and phonics in Portuguese. But she was dynamic. She had assimilated herself to the staff and they loved her. And so I know our human resources director, and she is here. There have been maybe some horror stories of trying to hire people for dual language immersion, Murray being one that was just in the news recently. And we have been assured by the state that when we make the decision and we make this recommendation, that the next day we're on the phone making sure we are getting qualified people here. And I think Marshall has mentioned this too. We will not put somebody in our elementary classroom that is not a good teacher, that does not have the skills to be able to manage a classroom and help our students learn. And that's what I saw in the schools that I visited. These were master teachers who were not only proficient in the language, but they were elementary ed certified teachers.
And one of the challenges that the state talked about when they came and presented is with certain languages, especially if you get the native speaker and they come, their assimilation into the staff is rather difficult. And some cultures, the way they do education is so foreign to the way we do education. And so that was one of the, kind of a asterisk, be careful of who you choose.
She's the right person, I think.
I was in the situation when we brought in some teachers from Spain when I was in the Ogden District and for a three-year contract, and they were great people. They had very good recommendations, had taught in Spain. The assimilation into the United States was very difficult. Their ability to understand how we do elementary education was a real impairment. Now, by the third year, things were fine, but I would say that at that point, that we chose not to continue that type of a program because we felt that the negative impact on kids was higher than the positive coming in from their culture. So one of the things, it's kind of a hiring forward process, as we've heard from many districts, where initially you're trying to look at who you have in the first grade who may have already on staff to be able to do, but as you're starting to hire for positions this year, but thinking about the next couple of years that you're hiring a third grade teacher to do regular for this year and next year, but in the third year they will be transitioning, they've got the skills to transition into the third grade dual immersion classroom. I know that Eric talked to a principal down in Davis District that had really was proactive in terms of their hiring, so that they had people who had the proficiency to move into those positions later on. Even though that year they hired them, they weren't in that position; they were in a regular classroom position. But it allows for you to have on staff people, so you're moving around a building level staff versus trying to look at district level movement.
And I think along with that too, what else we found is it's almost equally imperative the English teacher that you pair up with that native speaking teacher. That this has to be a teacher that is collaborative, that is a team player, because they are working closely together, and her management system really becomes the native speakers that do language immersion and teachers management system. And, you know,
well, you share kids.
You share kids, and, you know, you're collaborating, and, you know, you're working together, and you're doing things. So that's another thing that we learned, is that English teacher is equally as important.
Does that have to be part of the negotiated agreement if there's a reduction of force? Does that factor into that at all?
There won't be a reduction in force.
I mean, if there ever were a reduction in force, would that factor in that we had dual immersion teachers that were teaching elementary students?
We would have to probably review that to determine whether or not the current language, and we're working on that reduction of force as it is, so that may be an issue that we have to at least have in there.
I would hope that we'd ever have a reduction of force, but I wonder if that would happen.
Yeah, and I'll just repeat, no teacher in the state of Utah has ever lost their job because of dual immersion.
Well,
that's good.
Yeah.
Because you're adding.
Well, I think you have enough turnover.
You do.
That you could, like, if you're proactive, you should be. We should be all right, I would think.
Number two, this is one thing that I really liked about what the principal shared with us. And for me, personally, I'm glad that they shared this with me. This is not a magnet. This is not a language magnet school. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure. You know, this is not. I want to be clear about that. The way that the principals put it, this is a parent choice program. Both of the schools that I went and visited, I'm glad they did, were in a similar situation to Hillcrest. They had empty classrooms. They needed more kids to come to their school. They needed a draw to bring kids to their school. And so they saw this as a parent choice program. So those 25 that they had from their from the inside of their school boundary was great. But they also saw the 25 that they drew from, you know, other schools and from other places, and people were driving their kids 30 minutes, in some cases an hour, to just take their kids to these dual language immersion schools. So it's really a parent choice program. It doesn't define the school. It's just one of the many programs that we offer in Logan City School District. And I think that's an important distinction that we need to remember, is that parents are choosing to put their kids in this program. Now, I don't know. I know the one that I visited, Lakeview Elementary, it was up until the last couple weeks of school, or 2 weeks before school started, they still didn't have the necessary 50 kids to make it go. And the principal kind of kept, you know, sending out emails and things like that. But they already had five other dual language immersion inside of their district. They had Chinese and Spanish and other ones. I don't think we're going to have that same problem. I think the recommendation is made, and if we go with this, I think we're going to have people beating down our doors wanting to have our kids in this program. And then finally, number one, and then I'll take some questions if you have any. It can be done. You know, it's being done in close to 70 schools in Utah, and I think sometimes, I know me personally, I sometimes focus on the things that might deter it from happening instead of focusing on the things that can make it happen. And I really do believe that this is something, in my opinion, is what's good for kids and really can be done in Logan City School District. And in a lot of ways, we can be really setting the stage for the success of our students, not only cognitively, but preparing them for the future. So thank you very much.
Questions?
Eric, will you address, I know one of the email we received was, how are you going to afford this?
Yeah.
Will you address the cost of doing something like this?
Right. There is no cost to the program. Actually, there are two languages right now that actually come with money from the state. This is one of the few programs that have the backing of some of our difficult education legislators, which is exciting for us. The two languages that do have, well, actually there's three. There's a couple languages that are considered to be critical languages in the state of Utah and in the United States, which means there are not enough people who speak this language, and so the United States government is encouraging people to speak this language. One is Portuguese, and the other is Chinese. And so there is state-funded money that comes if we choose one of those two languages. Spanish also does have a little bit of money that goes along with it also to be help with materials and supplies. The way the two schools that I visited use their money is, one, they hired another teacher there was enough money that they could hire another teacher that was a native Portuguese speaker, so there were actually two adults in the classroom helping the students. The other school that I went and visited, they had enough money to hire an aide, and they decided to use that money for an aide and then also for materials. Obviously, it's a little more difficult to find materials in Portuguese and Chinese, so that's why the state has said we'll give anywhere between $5,000 to $20,000 to be able to get this program up and going. The other thing that the state has also provided for Portuguese in particular is they're offering to start it in first and second grade for this next school year. And they offer a summer program, $8,000 to $10,000, to be able to bring those students that have been accepted for the program in first and second grade and run a, what they call a Star Talk program for a couple weeks in the summer to get those kids up to at least to a level where they're conversationally speaking Portuguese. And they use the movie Rio, have you seen that movie?
Mm-hmm.
And it, which is, and it's in Portuguese, and they give that to the students and they encourage them to watch that every day so they're picking up on some of the Portuguese. So,
how widespread is Portuguese in the world?
We were so surprised with the presentation of Portuguese.
It is the seventh most spoken language in the world.
The State Department wants people.
Yeah. And so it is the sixth largest economy in the world. 50,000 people in Utah speak Portuguese.
I wouldn't have known that at all.
Yeah, isn't that?
It's primarily because of Brazil.
But Brazil, exactly. And so that's their connection. It's not Portugal. The connection here is Brazil. Brazil wants American businessmen and other people to come to their country, and right now they want people who are bilingual, people who speak Portuguese and people who speak English. So I asked the same question, why Portuguese? That seems like such a random language. But it's really one of those critical languages that they are wanting. The other advantage of Portuguese, as I talk to them, is 19 of the 26 syllables are similar between Spanish and Portuguese. And so people who learn Portuguese, it's a little bit harder than Spanish, but once they make that decision to learn Spanish, it's so much easier for them to do it. It's harder the other way. If you learn Spanish, it's harder to learn Portuguese.
But they can usually understand each other.
They can understand each other. And so I was in there. I speak very minimal, un poquito español, but I was understanding the things that she was trying to convey, a lot of body language, a lot of things, and they'd only been in there a month, so the students were still speaking English back to the teacher, but she only responded in Portuguese back to them. And that's what you'll find in every dual language immersion program. They even think that this teacher doesn't know how to speak English because they're fluent in English also, but all conversation, everything is done in the native language with the student, including SEP conferences.
Is the idea that it starts in the first grade, which may follow in the second, third, fourth, up through 12?
It would be a rolling adoption. That's a good question, Zane. I asked that. I said, where do you foresee these kids? You know, where do they go from this? So the idea is they would go up into fifth grade, then go into the middle school. So we would have to start those conversations with the middle school because you'd have a cadre of students that are fluent in the language coming into middle school. And then when they get into ninth grade, they actually take the AP exam for that language. So they are, by that time, they are almost fluent speakers. In 10th grade, they are taking 300 level classes or clepping out like a LDS missionary would do to get credits for college. And then they could be taking college level classes the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade year. Or starting a third language their sophomore year. So, yeah, it's kind of a cool process. And I think we have to kind of look at that in the future, how we're, you know, accommodating these students, because you're going to have a group of students that are fluent in this language.
The first district who have gotten junior high school students right now is the Davis District, and they have developed a pilot program for their seventh graders, and they're right now they're kind of the guinea pigs for the state to determine how do we transition from an elementary into a middle school. They had a K-6 program that they had run and had literally gone through their time, and because they jumped on this, a couple of schools had jumped on it from the first year, because we were in our seventh year of dual immersion within the state of Utah. So they will have
kind of plowed the trail for us as we've had those discussions, but it does change dramatically our secondary offerings.
I guess my question would be, okay, so first and second we have two teachers. Does that continue on third, fourth?
Yes. Every year you would add another grade level. What they're looking at, a Portuguese would actually start a first and second at the same year. Most of them start just in the first grade. The first year, first and second, the second, first, second, and third, yeah. Third, and so forth until you have first through fifth. But some schools have actually even started in a kindergarten program.
So you always have two teachers for every class, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
So two sections every year, all the way through.
Okay, so if they give money for first and second, what about third, fourth, and on out?
Yeah, the money continues every single year because it's a critical language, and that's in Portuguese and Chinese.
And the Spanish as well.
And explain what they require with Spanish, because Spanish is different.
Yeah, we talked about the two-way. They're really encouraging two-way Spanish dual immersion right now, which is 33% of those students that are in that program are native speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the advantage there, as I think Christy mentioned, was that if students drop out, you can replace them easily with students that are native speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really the advantage as you continue back. There is a one-way Spanish dual immersion where the students are not native for the most part. They're not encouraging really to do that right now because they already have 40 of those in the state. And it's like they're kind of saturated with one-way Spanish immersion. So the recommendation by Greg Roberts was two-way if you're going to be Spanish.
I guess just my question, it just makes me think, you know, whenever you hear that they're going to give money for that, if we go 6-7 years down the road, we have two teachers and everything, and all of a sudden the legislature says, well, we're not going to give you any more money.
The money really that you're looking at outside of, if you're looking at for the Spanish, it's more for your supplies, at the primary amount. The Portuguese government, actually, not even Brazil, this is coming from Portugal, they're the ones who are pushing a lot of funding into it, and part of it is because they have a glut of teacher or pre-service teachers that have finished there and are ready to be in classrooms, and they don't have the classrooms for them because they are actually in a declining in student enrollment. So they're trying to place their people in the United States or any other country that would be able to take them. So right now, even without that, again, this is one of the decisions we have to make. In majority of the materials that we would be looking for are primarily you're looking at your math and your science. They are currently, most of the major publishers have their materials that we would be using in our regular classroom also in Spanish. So it would be a similar book district-wide for the grade level, but one is in one language, one's in another. The challenge you would have is when you're starting to look at some of the other languages. Again, part of the discussion process is if we go into Portuguese, we've got to make sure and ensure that the materials that we have are sufficient for the success, because the last thing we want is to have a lower expectation of those students in terms of the end of level tests, et cetera, because they will be taking end of level tests on the subject levels.
So, Mark, can I speak then? And I totally agree. So, really, the money is just supplementary.
I see.
You know what I mean? It's not, the program is not dependent on the money.
The existence of the teachers would not be added teachers. They would be, we would have those sections anyway. It just happens that we're putting them towards. So, if they have four sections at Hillcrest, two sections would be involved, and this two sections would be regular.
And that would be one additional teacher with those two sections.
Well, actually, it's not. There's still four teachers. You still have four teachers, but you're with the 50. These two are kind of hooked at the hip, and because they're swapping kids this way, where these two teachers are doing it the traditional way.
Okay, that's right.
So the money is not for personnel; it's for supplies. So in order to pull us off without laying anyone off, somebody's going to have to be moved to a different school, and someone else brought in.
Unless someone at the school is there who can teach, which happens.
Or someone retired.
Right. Mm-hmm. If there's through attrition, correct.
Or leaves for some other reason.
Okay. And the materials, that's, if I could speak to that for a minute. Last year as elementary principal, we were looking at two math programs, and we were really able to either one. One is Go Math, which is what we went with. The other one was one called Envisions. So in Portuguese, they have translated Envisions into Portuguese. So if we went with Portuguese, it would use that Envisions program. I talked about that with Barbara Child, our district math specialist. It's great. So that it was neck and neck. It was, you know, really either one. We could have gone with either one. It'd been great. So that's kind of what Marshall was talking about. It's because you just can't find a textbook in Portuguese. But Envisions has worked with the state of Utah to do that. And then also, there's no phonics program in Brazil. They don't have a phonics program. So they have come up with their own phonics program. And so that's where part of that money comes, is to come up with a phonics curriculum for Portuguese. And same with Chinese. You know, we are, you know, we talk about how we're behind the world in education. You know, we're not. We are really at the front edge of curriculum and instruction. And so people are looking to our American model as a model for curriculum and instruction. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Hmm.
So that was neat.
And did you say how it was received just by talking with your teachers at your school?
You know, it's mixed. I'll be honest with you. It really is mixed. You know, some teachers are, you know, their response is, well, how, you know, there's so much to cover. How can you teach, you know, a second language and cover all the things that we're required to do? Some are excited about it, think it's a great opportunity for our school to grow. And once again, I've only talked to a handful of teachers at my school. Some are nervous. Some, you know, are nervous about what that would do to their position. Because once again, you know, if they're... But I think as we've talked to the principals, and I think Marshall referenced it, you just have to be kind of strategic and look about, you know, your grade levels. You know, where are your retiring people going to be in a couple of years? Where are your new teachers that might move on to another position? And like I said, that Alta Vista in Canyons where Jed visited, not one person has had to move in that school because the principal was very strategic about, you know, how that all worked. So there is kind of an art and science to this, you know, that we need to look at as principals. We need to make sure that we are valuing our teachers as professionals, and looking at that, because I think that is important. We don't want to lose our existing staff or have them think that we value them less. And that is, I did hear that from one teacher. Are you saying that if you don't value what I do, you know, every single day in my classroom? And the answer is, of course we value, absolutely we do. We're just looking at this as a parent choice program for our elementary school. So I think once we explain that, and if you talk one-on-one with teachers, I think they get it. It's just when you haven't had those one-on-one conversations, all the other information, I think, gets muddled. And I think that's why Marshall is so smart under his leadership to send out a letter, say, I'll meet with you individually. And he's going to go around and meet with the first grade teachers. That's where the real information gets dispersed. Mm-hmm. So
if we did start this next year, then I take it we would start looking at possible teachers. Say we had a third grade teacher in whatever school we're in. That's where we'd start this year. We'd say, all right.
Well, that would be one of the, yes. In fact, after I sent out that information, I received from two teachers who already expressed interest in being involved. And so I don't, you know, it may not be the fruition to that, but we do have staff who have interest in being both the Spanish-speaking teacher as well as the English teacher.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we do have to determine which two schools.
Correct. And that is going to be, as we look at that over the next 2 months, it is looking at our numbers. Looking at our float numbers, our UAP, you know, in terms of where our students are in terms of their scores and whether they meet the heritage, because you can have a heritage student who does not speak their native language. That is a possibility. So as we look at that, and that heritage designation is one that we'll have to have some discussion on, because that's not part of any of the reports that we do. That's an interesting one, but we do have that as an option, especially if that becomes our ESL program for that school, at least that component. So it actually changes how we will provide ESL services within a school if we go to that model, specifically in this case Spanish. We don't have we would not be able to do a two-way
dual immersion
in any other language. Yeah. So we have to look at the languages and make a determination how many schools, what languages they're going to have, and then we start looking at the staff.
You know, that's an interesting statement. I was building a house this year, had a number of Hispanics come and have worked on it, and I've asked them that question: are you continuing to teach your kids Spanish? And it has blown me away how many said no. I've become lazy, we don't speak it at home, and we're just letting our kids learn English. And I said, you are being so foolish. And they said, yeah, I know, we should, but... And I would say at least half of them that has been here have said that, I'm too lazy.
And it shows we value other cultures, not just English-speaking cultures. Yeah. And I think that's something, whatever the language it is, we're saying, you're coming to us from Myanmar, you're coming to us from wherever, your school, they come from everywhere.
Yeah.
And we are teaching that at our school because we believe that knowing more than one language is so valuable.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really great cultural diversity, celebrating diversity that we've talked about. It's really one way to say we truly do believe that.
And then, you know, like I said, some parents, it doesn't matter the language. You know, they just see the cognitive benefits and the cultural benefits of that.
We wish we had it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, outside of the United States, it is very common to see people speaking two or three languages. So I think
you have to
kind of need to look at what we value. Absolutely.
I just told Lynn we should have dual immersion board meeting.
Do you want to tell them what I said?
No.
Well, I think as we go through this process and wherever it goes, I think having a presentation
would be awesome.
German is one of the languages that they can do, but they have not.
The county is going to have one French. One of their schools will be French.
French, Chinese, and Portuguese is what the county is.
Really?
No Spanish. And I've had two parents already come to me from the county saying, are you guys going to do Spanish? If you do, I'll bring my kids to Logan City School District. So, something to
Spanish about. Is way undervalued in this whole process. It's not considered a critical language. The parents don't maintain it with their kids because it's not considered a language of commerce. It's not considered a language that will get you somewhere in the future, and it's really wrong all the way around. This process teaches us it doesn't matter the language, we really need to get kids involved and give them the opportunity to stretch and grow in this way.
And you know, my son being able to speak Spanish in Logan, Utah, he just is amazing, the opportunities that he has. And every day he can speak Spanish to somebody.
The interesting thing is that in terms of economically, it is becoming something that is now required in the financial parts. And they're just, it's getting to a point where when you look at the projections of native speakers in Spanish in the United States, they will be soon at between 33% to 45% of the United States population within 25 years.
Lots of misconceptions.
So it's an opportunity for our kids. Again, it's interesting because if this discussion was in any other country, they would be going, well, we just do this. and all students do this. Normally in Europe, you come out of elementary school at least with one language. If not, you're starting your second language, and by the time you graduate from high school, you're into your third and fourth languages prior to college. I mean, that's the nature of education. We just don't value languages like they do elsewhere in the world.
I heard one guy say the reason I don't like Spanish is because it's related to the drug cartel. He said, that's one thing to do with that.
And there was one person from the state who made a little bit of caution that if you only do Spanish, every bigot that you know will come out and make some comment. But we discussed in the committee that we think our community is different than that, and that we could present, if we were to choose only Spanish and to choose to do the two-way, that we think it could present it in such a way that we wouldn't get those types of comments that they say in some communities they've had. You know, he recommended if you go Spanish, you also go Chinese or Portuguese or something else. And I think as our committee, we didn't necessarily feel that that was necessary in Logan, Utah. But there are some who have that attitude.
Yeah.
And I would hope we would be able to educate our community.
We'll just take them out.
And take away the bigotry, you know. And I think that's one of the things I see is this doing is to reduce bigotry and to help. How wonderful it is to have two languages, whatever the language, and let's use a language that can be used in Logan, Utah, and increase the diversity of our culture.
Right, I just remember two more reasons for Portuguese, okay?
Let's have it.
In the LDS Church, English is the most spoken, Spanish is second, Portuguese is third. More people in Latin America speak Portuguese than Spanish. People don't realize that, but Brazil is huge.
My oldest son went there.
And
I don't know how much Portuguese he still knows.
Yeah. So those are just a couple, because I asked that same question.
Yeah, we were blown away.
Yeah, just why?
It was really strange at that presentation.
And the person who facilitated, you know, took out her computer and had all these things on her PowerPoint, you know. And so, you know, I think even though Portuguese and Chinese and some of these are in the earlier stages, the state, like Marshall has said, has been doing dual language immersion for 7 years. So they've learned from, you know, what works and what doesn't, and you know, things like, so even though some of these languages might be early in their infancy in terms of that, dual language immersion in itself is not new.
Mm.
And don't confuse that with the old model of, you know, where you had one teacher and half the day she was speaking in English and half the day she was speaking in Spanish. Those programs didn't work in the state. And I know that was about, 10 years ago, Marshall?
They were doing a lot in Utah County.
Yeah, in Utah County. And that's the one they went to. They said, oh, there was such a negative perception of dual immersion. And then once they informed their public, and informed their parents and their community members, there was just an overwhelming wave of support that this is the right way to do it. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah.
And I know just from my college, I had language throughout, but in college I had a professor who had taught at the Naval Academy. And you walked in his room and he spoke that language and he grilled you and he drilled you. And it was the first time I started to think in French, because that's the only way he would communicate. And so my mind had to shift. But as long as I knew I could ask questions in the last 5 minutes, I didn't start thinking in French.
And that's what they do in these dual language immersion is the kids can speak English all the way till Christmas break. Then they have a big party, they go, you know, and then when they come back from Christmas break, when they're in that half of the day, they only speak that native language. Mm-hmm. And that conversation's only going back and forth.
No.
I think there's a misconception that they don't, you know, they don't speak English and they're just, you know, and they don't understand and all this stuff. No, that's not the case. You know, they're speaking English to the teacher, but she's responding in the native language until January, and then they are going back and forth.
Hmm. My first exposure to Spanish was at the Tabernacle Choir in Mexico, and they told us, when you want to catch a cab, tell them dos peso, because you don't want to pay any more than that.
Yeah.
With the taxi.
And the video that we watched, can they go and access it? Because that was so amazing to have those students speak.
On the USOE website, I believe.
If
I will.
If you go do language immersion, it was amazing to hear these children with accents. And they were speaking French, and I thought, wow.
Yeah.
So if you're interested, go to the dual language immersion on this USOE site. Yeah, I know a lot of things are hard to find on there.
Yeah, it's not the most user-friendly website. Yeah, there's
I couldn't believe the accents they were speaking with.
Well, children are going to be apt to learn language much more readily than we as adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And the fact is they will understand it much more readily than we will, much faster than we will.
The Spanish kids, how quickly pick up English.
That's right. Yeah.
Elementary school is amazing.
You know, one of the questions we asked is, you know, these are first graders. They're just learning, you know, to write and learning to speak and learning to do math. And they were like, isn't that confusing to them to learn now things in two languages rather than one? And the example they gave of this one school that we visited was they've been in a month of instruction in math. And so they gave their very first assessment to the students that were in the dual language immersion program and the students that were, not in the dual language immersion. And the math scores, so once again, they've only been instructed in Portuguese for a month in math. Their math scores in that group were the highest they've ever had in the history of their school.
Wow.
And the school was 13 years old. So, I mean, and I looked at that and I thought, why would that be the case? It's because they were thinking critically. They were, you know, they understood what the number represented, both in English and Portuguese. They were critically thinking and analyzing. And it was just really, really fun to see students at that young of age really be successful.
Okay. Eric, thank you.
Great job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
He's done a lot of work on it.
Anything else, Marshall?
Yeah, good reports about you, Eric, all the time.
Oh, thanks.
Just as one real quick thing, I'll send you tomorrow. I received from Dixie Allen from the State School Board some information from Senator Stevenson. As much as we thought we were making some progress, he's now accusing public ed of being liars and in regards to we have not done what we were told to do in terms of accountability. So I'll send you the report that went out in the Taxpayers Association flyer. It's pretty damaging. It's just very unfortunate right now that there cannot be a civil dialogue on anything with some of our legislators. It's very frustrating. Also, if you have not heard, Martel Munlove was named the new state superintendent last night, and we're excited about that and that transition, and he'll do a great job in that position. We have that coming up on Thursday night, 6 o'clock, Elements.
No, it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow night. It's the 10th, not the
11th? My calendar.
I had it on.
It's not tomorrow.
It's Wednesday. It's the 10th. It's not the 11th.
Is it here, though? Not in Maddox?
No, it is here. It's at the Elements.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
It is tomorrow.
On the 10th. I apologize. I had, for some reason, I was on the wrong day. So that, if you'll be there tomorrow, and are you leading us in that?
I am.
Very good.
What are you talking about? The Utah Core Standards? Hopefully we have some presentations. What is the word?
Presentations.
From the Utah State Office to do math standards and English standards. So it's going to be fun.
Great.
Okay, we won't meet and have Jim drive it.
No, I think everybody.
No, I think
can
we can make it there.
Well, I'll be happy to do that if you want.
Do we know which entrance we're going?
It's at Elements.
It's
in the Elements itself.
Not the actual other side somewhere.
We'll get Jim to pick us all up.
You know how to get there, Christine?
I don't think so.
And it's 6 o'clock.
P.M.
P.M. Not in the morning.
Oh, I hope I'm there at 6 o'clock. I might not be. If I'm not there, you take over.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll adjourn at 7:33.